Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Weekly for Saturday, April 27th, 2024. And our top story today, a double dose of bad economic data. And here to help us break it all down, Jane King joins us this morning from the NASDAQ. Jane, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Oh, always great to be with you, Jeffrey.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about iffy economic data in a minute, but you had a very interesting week. You had a chance to attend a Samsung event around artificial intelligence. What can you tell us about the event, and what can you tell us what you learned?
Yeah, so Samsung unveiled AI in their newest phones. It's actually going to go to some of their older phones as well eventually, but it was just interesting to talk about what they're seeing people use. So they have something called Circle to Search. So if you see something, you can kind of just circle it on your phone, and it will use AI, and it will find it and tell you what it is, whether it's a plant or a shirt or, you know, whatever you're looking for. They said that's really popular. A lot of people using it for a voice assistant and kind of finding restaurants and things like that as well. But they talked about, like, the future, even more personalization. So this AI is going to get to know us and be able to make recommendations based on what they know our favorite restaurants are and movies are and things to do when we go on travel. So it's just really interesting to hear some of the people, even from South Korea, that designed the AI talk about how they see things unfolding over the next few years.
Samsung certainly giving Apple a run for its money. I know Apple is one of the largest, if not the largest company. So be interesting to see what how Apple responds. All right, Jane, it was I don't know if I want to say a disappointing week in the market, but we definitely got some challenging economic data. You want to talk about GDP and PCE and what it all means?
Well, you know, we're hearing a word resurface we haven't heard in a while, stagflation.
1970s.
So that's basically stagnant growth and high inflation. And it's stagflation and very tough to get out of because the Fed can't really lower interest rates to get the economy going because that's inflationary. So I think the market sold off on this news, but we got some more inflation numbers on Friday. They weren't quite as scary. And then there was some talk about, well, maybe this, you know, inflation number was just really January. And that was kind of a weird month. And there was some inflation or some import data that kind of skewed that number a little bit. So I think we'll keep an eye on these CPI numbers and all of those numbers more than we even do already to see where inflation is going.
Well, I wonder if Jerome Powell is going to make a phone call to Paul Volcker. I don't even know if Paul Volcker is still alive, but I think Paul Volcker, who was the Fed chairman during the stagflation era, kind of got us out of it. I mean, it wasn't
got it out. I mean, but it was tough. Stared it down, and you know, it's tough decision making to get out of this. And in an election year, that makes it even more interesting.
Well, yeah, because you're going to have pressure from the White House. You're going to have pressure from the candidates, and I don't know. I guess Jerome Powell gets compensated enough to be in the pressure cooker or the. I always think of it like a juicer. I feel like he's in an
like
orange
boiling juice,
right?
He's, you know, look, when you take on the role of the Federal Reserve Chair, you know that, you know, you may have situations like this, and you got to make some tough decisions. So we'll see how they handle it.
Yeah, but markets. Not liking it too much. I mean, a lot of give back this week, Jane. A lot of people concerned. We have been talking about this, and I hate that we talk about it every week, but we need to talk about it and about the rate cut or rate increases. They had been built into the market's expectations. Now it looks like, based on what we saw with GDP and PCE and some of these other numbers, it's much later, if at all, in the year.
All this year. Yeah. Now it feels like once that calendar turned to April, something changed in Wall Street psyche. And everybody got worried about interest rate cuts again. And maybe we won't have any, or maybe just one later this year. So things did change. And I think it's just we're really data dependent right now, particularly on inflation.
Yeah. I want to talk about Main Street. People like you and I mean, we're you know, we cover this stuff, but, you know, we're not in the boardrooms. How do you think the American people are get synthesize all this data? Because, it you know, between this and the politics, it seems like we're always talking about the Fed. We're always talking about interest rates. I would think that I would posit to you that people are probably consumers are just reacting to the prices they see, the prices of gas, the prices of food when they go out to eat, when they go to the grocery store. They're reacting to those things and they're making their own decisions based on that. So they're probably not even thinking about the rate cuts. That's really a Wall Street thing.
Right. And well, and I do reports for local TV stations around the country. So I get a sense of what mainstream consumers are thinking out there. And inflation is absolutely it, whether it's food inflation or car insurance or rent. There's this story out today, a study by AARP, that one in four Americans over the age of 50 don't think they will ever be able to retire. They're like, we just can't put any money away. We're paying so much for groceries and rent and things like that. So those are the kind of things that just, demoralize people. And that's, one of the things that we're dealing with in the country right now. So it is very different in terms of what Wall Street, how they see things, and how the average American consumer sees things.
You know what we call those people, Jane? We call them real Americans. That's what we call them here on the network.
That's right.
It
Yeah.
is, just really great people, really great people in this country.
Absolutely.
Jane, great to see you as always. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back on the program again next week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Jane. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And when we come back, we take a look at some of our best segments for the week. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN Weekly. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries.
33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. It was another great week of programs here on the Broadcast Retirement Network with great topics and, of course, great guests. We kicked off the week with a look at the time is now for retirement income solutions. Let's take a look.
Adoption is definitely picking up. But I think that's going to accelerate dramatically as record keepers come online with their programs. There was a large record keeper that made a significant announcement a couple weeks back. And I think that there's going to be others that will follow. So you can use the comparison. You could go to the store. The product that you may want is not on the shelf. I think that's where we kind of have been with retirement income. There's a lot of good solutions out there, good product out there, but they haven't yet become available on the record keeper's shelf. So that's starting to happen. And I think as that accelerates, and as we get to industry norm adoption level, it's going to make it even easier for people to get access. And that's where I think, to your question, the adoption is really going to pick up and accelerate. So I think that advisors, consultants are an important part. They're a catalyst for adoption at the plan level for sure. So as they get more comfortable, educated on these solutions, how they work, what fits the needs of the various plan sponsors, that's going to help move it along. And I think to your first question, I think as record keepers are setting up their programs, they're leveraging technology providers to enable kind of a one-to-many connection, so they don't have to connect individually to all of the different products out there. And there's a number of them, and I think that's important because particularly for the larger record keepers, they're going to have different needs from different plans. And even within a large plan, the need of a 22-year-old that's just coming into the firm versus somebody that's approaching retirement, their needs are very, very different, right? And the types of solutions they're going to need is very different. There's not going to be a single solution that's going to meet the needs of everybody, much like there's not a single fund. You have more than one fund on a menu, you're going to need to have multiple solutions available. And maybe a plan isn't going to adopt every single one, but they at least need to be able to have choice to pick the products that best suit the needs of their individual participants. About two-thirds of the assets, according to recent Cerulli data, come into plans via QDIA, right? And into target date funds via the QDIA. And I think for us as an industry to think that retirement income adoption flows are going to be different than how traditional flows come in is just not the correct approach. So these solutions have to be defaulted in some form or fashion. So obviously the QDIA would be the biggest, but there's other ways that you could get default-like access into these solutions. There could be a paternalistic plan that wants to put an employer match, profit sharing, and they feel it's in the best interest of their participants to get access to these products through those programs. And then through managed accounts as well. And I think that's where the personalization comes in, the ability to pull in outside assets, pension, account for Social Security as well, and really provide that holistic retirement plan as opposed to just a kind of a single focused age retirement-based target date type of solution. So I think that we're definitely moving in that direction. And again, technology, being able to analyze data, pull data in, that's important, a really important factor to enabling all of that. Traditionally, it had been a large issue. So most of the products came out, they were proprietary. So they really couldn't be moved. They were, and when I say proprietary, it was a record keeper that traditionally had an asset manager and an insurer, and they created these products and they made them available within their record keeping platforms. Now we have more third-party products coming to market, non-proprietary. So it's not just the record keeper. There's other players in the industry, asset managers, insurers, and even consortiums coming together to bring these products to market. So Secure 1.0 really addressed participant portability. So it's now required to provide portability if you're leaving the plan out to a participant to maintain those benefit values. That's law, that's a requirement. I think the other, and technology is enabling a more seamless flow for the participant to get from point A to point B, maintain those benefits, and continue to get access to the product they initially bought into. On the plan side, back to the proprietary, there is a concern, even if I bought into one of these solutions, I would then get locked in with that record keeper and forever. And if I tried to leave, then it would be really messy for my participants to maintain those benefits, right? So now, utilizing technology and those one-to-many connections I spoke to before, you have a single entity that's sitting on those guaranteed benefit values. And as that plan chooses to move from record keeper A to record keeper B, they're simply porting those benefits over, and the product has to be available as well in both of those situations. But allowing that ability to port those benefits over, maintain the product in the same way that it had occurred on record keeper A onto record keeper B, which is really important. And that's helping a lot of advisors and consultants get over that hurdle because they knew about these first generation products and they didn't want to get their clients locked into a single relationship. It's not in their best interest.
Next up, we discussed reducing the number of veteran suicides. Let's take a look.
So the Legion has a major focus. They've had a focus for the last few years, and this year is a big year as well. We started our Be the One campaign back in 2021, and then it turned into a movement that we really use that in order to connect our veterans. This is something that's near and dear to my own heart. I have lost several brothers and sisters through suicide, and I've lost some personal friends that were not veterans through suicide. So I kind of see it on the boat on both sides. So not only is this a personal issue, but it's also an organizational focus, and it's a focus nationwide too, working with other veteran service organizations. No one should feel isolated and in that area where they feel that there's no way out. So that's really what we want to change, and we want to make sure that our veterans know that we're family and that we're all here together and that we will make it through. When we join the military, you have 10 weeks. Most services have some sort of boot camp or basic training for 10 weeks. And in those 10 weeks, they break down your civilian identity and they build you up as a soldier. At me personally, I was Army, so I'm going to go with soldier, but really Marine, sailor, any of that. They build you up as a service member together. So then you are a unit. Whether or not you're with the same people, you're always a unit as a main body of service members. And then you always have that connection. You have that support system. Then you build that support system in your barracks or in the houses that you live in on post. So you move as a body and you always have support with people that understand you, that people have been through the same situations or similar situations, that go through the same kind of family hardships, whether it's relationships or kids growing up. They always say it takes a village. Well, it takes a village to take care of a veteran too. And then when we get discharged, no matter what level discharge or what the reason is, we instantly become irrelevant. That's what it feels like. We no longer have that uniform. We no longer have that identity. And they don't have a 10-week deprogramming system when you leave the military. So you have, they do have a transition assistance program, which helps highlight some of the benefits and the resources that you can use when you get out. But overall, there's nothing that deprograms that need or that unity to be a part of something. And so then you move on to be with yourself and possibly your family. Hopefully you have that support system. But you go from your day being kind of run for you as to what you're going to do that day. I remember getting in trouble because I missed a dental appointment. And that's, that was assigned by the military, right? So they scheduled your appointments. They did all those things. You had someone to help you with finances and someone to help you make sure that you could pay your rent. And, you had all these things that in this kind of package to hold on to you. And then it feels like the floor drops out when you get out. I remember when I got out in 2013, I was starting my new job as a civilian and I was sitting in my closet crying because I didn't know what to wear. That's like, that's the, and that sounds so kind of minuscule to somebody who hasn't experienced it. But when you're responsibility is to be in the right uniform at the right time in the right place, doing the right thing, that's really easy to follow. And then when you get into the civilian world, not only do you feel like you're invisible, that you're irrelevant, but you also lose that support system. You lose that those reassurances, and you use those standards. You lose those standards that you've gone through however long you've been in the military. So it feels very lonely and very isolating. When you get out, and it's just that's something that we that's the area that we really need to work on. As a family member, as a my wife is also a veteran, so I also know that perspective, and I work a lot with our organization not only works with the American Legion Auxiliary, but also the Sons of the Legion, and we also really kind of delve into the caregiver and support systems legislatively too. That's something that you just feel helpless as a caregiver, even a child of a veteran. You feel helpless that you want to help them, but ultimately it comes down to if the veteran is going to be able to help themselves. So we as veterans want to take care of ourselves, we want to take care of our family, and then we get to the point where we feel like we can't take care of them because they're taking care of us. So it is a very complex situation. caregivers get exhausted, the support systems get exhausted, the veterans get exhausted. That's why we really look for things that can help, you know, provide respite care or any kind of support in scheduling and resources and things like that. But the family, it's also really hard on the family too, in addition to losing that support system that they have with the military. So the spouses of the veteran would be, you know, knew each other in the neighborhood and they all raised the kids together. And now they moved somewhere else where they don't have that kind of family. So it is really strenuous on all parties involved.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN Weekly. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN Sunday. I'll be joined in segment one by the Legal Eagles, David Levine and Kevin Walsh of Groom Law Group. And then in segment two, Oliver Rennick of the Schwab Network joins us to help break down markets and give a sense for what's happening. So until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.